Welcome to the 57th episode of Celluloid Tunes and the 19th International Edition. Celluloid Tunes is the first and only webcast about film music in Norway, and my name is Tor Joachim Haga. On June 7th, the legendary prog band Yes visited Oslo for their 50th anniversary tour, including key members Rick Wakeman, John Anderson and Trevor Rabin. Now, the South African guitarist and composer Trevor Rabin was very much the band leader throughout the late 80s and 90s, the man behind such hits as Owner of a Lonely Heart, for example, which some of you might remember. But the 64-year-old composer also has a long and fruitful career as a film composer, starting in the mid-90s and very much up to this day. So we had the opportunity to sit down with the man himself for a 30-minute chat about his film career so far. Now, the conversation went in many different directions and wasn't sort of chronological, so I present it here relatively sort of unedited, but obviously we'll play some music clips at more or less appropriate moments. And I started off by asking him about his early beginnings in Johannesburg, where both of his parents were involved in the music industry.
Yes, my dad was he was the leader of the Johannesburg Symphony Orchestra. My mother was a piano teacher and a ballet, very involved in the arts. And every child, every sibling at 5 years old was playing. I could read music before I could read English, you know. It's just one of those places, you know. So he made me practice every day and before school, after dinner, and I was like, God, this is... But now I'm happy, you know.
Of course. Yeah. But the transition into film music was...
Yes.
Seems, because I read that it was to do with Steven Seagal, of all people. With Glimmer Man. It was just like a coincidence?
You know, it was a complete coincidence. I mean, I'd always wanted to do... I did a movie when I was 19 years old.
Death of a Snowman.
And that's before MIDI and SMPTE and computers and everything. It was all just to paper and with an orchestra. And I watched the film with a projector on a sheet in a hotel. And I watched it and I write some stuff and then they put it where they want. It wasn't very specific like we do today, you know. And I'd always thought... I'd like to do that, especially now, because, I mean, I'm very involved in technology. The last album I did with Yes, I produced, and I did, it was the first album, non-linear, digital. And so I was always interested in that, and I thought, yeah, you know, I'd had enough. I'd done 14 years with Yes, and I wanted to get off the road. And it's just funny I'm here. And I went to a restaurant which Steven Seagal owned and wanted. I asked if I wouldn't mind... calling him and if I've got some time getting together. So I said, no, that's what he... And I was in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, maybe he's got a phone number for me I could use. So I went and met with him and he wanted a guitar lesson. So I think I taught him Red House, Hendrix, you know. And he was very happy and he said, anything I can do for you? I said, well, if you've got a name of an agent or something that you recommend, you know. He said, no, why? I said, well, I want to do movies. And he said, do you know how? I said, well, you know, I can conduct, I can orchestrate, I can arrange. I know the technology. I'm pretty confident. He said, well, I've just finished Glimmer Man, and do you want to do it? Mm. I said, yeah. And that was it. It was just like that. And then my next movie was Homegrown, but then Jerry Bruckheimer got hold of me and didn't let go for 13 movies.
Exactly, and you know, that's actually the beginning of the sort of very period between 1995 and 2000 where he did all these movies.
Yeah.
And I mean, Armageddon, of course, we have to mention that because for me it's sort of typical of your sound with a sort of big, airy guitars. There's a song on Talk, it's called I Am Waiting, the opening
Yes.
And which is reminiscent of the theme for Harry or something in Armageddon.
Oh my God, that's right. I never thought of that. I mean, but it's obviously there, but yes.
So that kind of lofty, airy guitar sound seems to be sort of a trademark for you. Do you agree with that?
I think so, yeah. The when I spoke to Michael Bay and Bruckheimer, when I said, what are you looking for the main theme, the essence of the movie? And Jerry just out of his mouth, he said, "I want the world anthem. Anthem for the world." It's okay, national anthem, and now it's the world anthem, fighting against an asteroid. So that was the idea.
Yeah. Let's play a selection from the Armageddon Suite. When talking about Armageddon, I find it's kind of appropriate to bring up the sort of power anthem style that Hans Zimmer refined in the 90s, and in a way also Rabin's relationship to the director Michael Bay.
I knew Hans because he was a programmer on the Buggles, and but he wasn't a musician, he was a programmer. But I know him very well. In fact, my brother-in-law runs his business side of things. But I didn't know his music at all. I mean, obviously I must have heard it and things, but I didn't used to go to those movies like The Rock and stuff like that. I didn't like those movies. Yeah. It's so funny I landed up
it's
doing
Michael
them. Yeah, yeah. In fact, I'm not a big fan of his movies. I love what it looks like, but the dialogue and everything, it's always it's not my favorite thing. There's other directors I much prefer working with than Michael Bay. I mean, not because he's difficult. So everyone says he's such a fucking son of a bitch, you know. But I always got on well with him. So just creatively, though. But no, I wasn't really aware of the music. I used to Bernard Herrmann. I used to hear this music when I went to drive-in theaters when I was like 15 and 16, and I thought, that's amazing, that music. And why is it not known, you know, like Sibelius or Stravinsky or something? Because it's on the same level, you know. So that was my influence, really. I really didn't know much about that whole sound of, you know, getting the Moccato strings and making it like Led Zeppelin riff or something. It wasn't part of it. So even though it led that way, maybe it's just coincidental that because I'm a guitarist, I think that way as far as that energy and stuff. But I can't say he was an influence. But then, you know, eventually, because the funny thing is when I was doing Armageddon, because I knew Hans just as a guy, Brockheimer wanted to work on the west side of Los Angeles. I live on the other side. And he said, well, how are we going to do this? I'm not coming out to your place every day. It's too far for me. I'm too busy. I said, well, you know what? It's all I'm going to be doing. And I opened a second studio near him. But before I did that, but for Armageddon, I said, I need a studio. And someone said to me, a friend of mine said, you know, Zimmer's got a bunch of rooms. I'm sure you could rent one from him. So I didn't even know what his place was or anything. I just knew he was a film composer. Yeah. And there was a lot of people who worked with him. Yeah. I didn't realize he had this factory, you know. So I phoned and he said, yeah, and I rented a room from him and got friendly with some of the guys. And in fact, then the next Brockheimer movie I did, Enemy of the State, I had become friendly with Harry Gregson-Williams. Yeah. And I invited him to help me on it. And he did some cues on it. And he's a very good guy. He helped me with some cues. It was so much stuff. My guy, Paul Linford, helps me. You know, not even ghostwriting. I say, here's the themes, here's the stuff. Do it, and then I'll look at it, and if it's right, we can present it. If it's not, I'll do what I think needs to be done, and then we'll present it. Or we won't, you know. No. So I used Harry like that for Armageddon. He was very useful, and we had a great time. We get on very well. So when it came to Enemy of the State, I was in the middle of doing Jack Frost. But you know what the agents are like. Don't worry, we'll work it out. Which means I'll stay up for 24 hours a day. And they get double commission. That's all it means, we'll work it out, right? But so I thought, I'm going to need someone to really help me on this and get through it. And I said to Harry, do you want to do this with me? And it ended up so well, the collaboration. I gave him a co-credit on the movie. So we became good friends.
This is the rhythmical track Savage Chase Part 1 from Enemy of the State, directed by Tony Scott. We'll be right back. One of my personal favourites by Rabin is The Sixth Day, which was Roger Spottiswoode's sort of techno thriller from the year 2000, about cloning, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. There are actually a couple of other things in this period as well. One of my favourites of yours is actually The Sixth Day.
Oh, I love doing that.
Because are you familiar with a television series from Britain called Bugs from the 90s? Music by Gavin Greenaway?
No, I've heard the name, but I don't know.
It's interesting because it's about technology solving crime through technology, but yes. He uses this sort of very classy British melody on top for the main theme. And the same thing occurred to me actually for the theme for that score, Adam's theme, I think. We used the sort of undulating technological things, you know, about the cloning, and then you have this...
Oh, those are the Sixth Day.
Sixth Day, yeah.
Yes, yes.
And you have this Arabic kind of vocals.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a biblical... Can you tell me something about the idea behind that approach?
You know, I knew this girl who's kind of sang like that. And I thought, oh, this would be kind of really interesting. I want... The opening I wanted to be very techno and stuff, but to integrate that kind of... It's almost a dichotomy, you know. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't fit, but it fits. And I always like, meeting these two very different things. That was one I really enjoyed doing. Because there was also playing. There was some almost jazz fusion stuff at the end. So I could sneak in some stuff, enjoyable stuff.
But I thought it was like it's about creation, and they use this sort of biblical.
That's exactly the thought. You know, that kind of almost tribal, old, chanting kind of voice thing, mixed in with all the technology.
So let's listen to Adam's theme from The Sixth Day.
Thank you.
Another film that has become somewhat of a cult favourite is Rennie Harlin's Deep Blue Sea from 1999. So the question is, how does one do a shark movie without sort of resorting to the obligatory John Williams and Jaws references?
You know, it was so hard because when I was writing the actual shark theme, I mean, how do you get away from dun, 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 dun? It's like, oh, anything you do, if you go dun, 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 it's still a repetitive thing, and you've got to have that repetitive thing. So it's almost no matter what you do, if it's at all repetitive, you're going to think of Jaws. And that was the hardest thing. But there were times when that whole thing blows up. I had a 90-piece choir and a 90-piece orchestra and a bunch of guitars, and I just threw everything against it, you know.
But Rennie Harlin seems to love music in his movies. He always gives lots of room for music, you know.
Like, who is that?
Rennie Harlin, the director.
Oh, Rennie's one of my favorite guys to work with. You know, because he's different. He's from Finland. He has a different vibe. He's very open, and it's funny, I spoke to him recently, he's in China, but he was very, I mean, it was just easy working with him, because he'd say, look, I love your stuff, I just do what you do, and I'd say, what do you think, he would have very specific ideas, but he would never say, how I want you to fix this. He said, look, I'm not feeling this there, can you have another look? That's the most he would say. Very, very good. Very instinctive director.
This then is a piece from Deep Blue Sea, showcasing the sort of operatic approach to the subject matter. For Michael Bay's 2003 sequel to Bad Boys, Mark Mancina was replaced by Trevor Rabin. Why did it differ so much from the original score? And what is Rabin's view on using existing themes by others?
You know, when I did Bad Boys 2, they had hired my friend, who was my keyboard player in my solo band for a bit, Mark Mancina. Yeah. And it didn't go well. And they said, please help us, you know, we want to do this. And But they had spoken to me, but I was busy. And I said, look, I'm still busy. And they said, please, you know, it's not working out. And I said, well, on one condition, I'm not using any of the original. And they said, do you not like it? I said, it's not me. I didn't write it. I'm not. If my job is to take somebody else's music and do it, you got the wrong guy. I don't do that, you know. I don't want to do that. I've done that once. I did the UCLA basketball thing. I redid it for them. It's another guy's thing. It was a favor. And I enjoyed it, but, it's, you know, I'd rather do my own music.
Yeah, because it seems to be more funky riffs and stuff in Bad Boys 2 than Mancina's Bad Boys, as far as I remember.
The first one.
And the first one, yeah. It's very
and it's old-fashioned, the first one. Mm. You know, it was trying to be fashionable then. And if you know, a movie like Great Raid, for example, so it's orchestra, so there's no fashion involved, it's just music. But Bad Boys 1 was definitely fashion of the time, so you bring it in now, it's just completely wrong, you know.
I guess almost like Con Air as well, because that's also sort of very typical of the...
Yes,
that you had to adhere to some, okay, I have to do, because this is now the style, I have to...
And that was a difficult one, because Mark was going to do that with me. Mm. And we started, and as we started... I was writing, he hadn't heard anything, and then he had to go and do, what was it called, Speed 2, I think.
Yeah.
And so he said, he went to, and said, look, I can't do this. And but Jerry had heard the stuff I was doing, so he was fine. So he actually didn't do anything on it, Mark. Mm. And there was actually a big argument, because Brockheimer called him to say, look, you haven't done anything on this. Trevor must get the credit. There's no reason for you to have a credit, but in the contract, it had him there to do it. So he phoned me and he said, Jerry wants me to change the credits around. And I said, you want one? Like that. And he said, well, yeah, it's in the contract. I said, he said, I need you to just speak to Jerry. I said, are you crazy? You haven't done anything on it. No. I said, you want to fight for this? You go ahead, but I'm not doing anything. So I don't think him and Jerry are friends. I'm surprised they even asked him for Bad Boys 2. Mm. It's because Michael, I think, wanted the original cast, you know.
I think so.
But then when it didn't work, they were very quick to get rid of him. And I just said to them, I'm not going anywhere near that. Mm. So, but I'll do it.
Rather than playing something from Bad Boys 2, let's play the brief main theme from Simon West's lavish 1997 action film Con Air, where Rabin had to, adhere somewhat to the contemporary trends at the time, using sort of fuzzy guitars and, towards the end of this track, these big, epic power anthem chords.
Thank you.
outside the world of power anthems and sort of rock-infused stylings, Rabin has also had the opportunity to explore more dissonant music, like Snakes on a Plane, for example, or the two Exorcist movies, Exorcist the Beginning from 2004 and Dominion, prequel to The Exorcist from 2005. So is this a sound that he's comfortable with or that he's particularly attracted to?
But it's fun to sort of let loose sometimes, to just do like dissonant stuff like you've done in Snakes on a Plane, partially, and
right.
The Exorcist.
Oh my God, you really know all this stuff.
Yeah, I'm a film music nerd. So then is that sort of something that you like to do, like, to go all atonal or go all...
That's my favorite. Yeah. I mean, I love a lot of composers, but one of my real favorites is Arnold Schoenberg. For Klar der Nacht, I mean, glorious. How do you do that, you know? So I love that stuff. And his whole 12-tonal thing, I don't know if you know that.
12-tonal, yeah, sure. Yeah,
yeah, so, I mean, it was just brilliant, you know. I mean, I never thought it was going to catch on to the point where everyone would be doing that, but certainly a lot of people have integrated it. I mean, there's a lot of guys who delve in the 12, you know, Bartok's, what's
Celeste,
it?
Celeste,
brilliant, right? Mm. But I just love that stuff, so... you know, there's so many great composers I do love. Rimsky-Korsakov, I mean, I hate to admit it, but on that, what's it called? Mountain with a rock. Race to Witch Mountain. Witch Mountain. Mm. You know, the dun, 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 da, da, dun. I borrowed a little bit from there. Because that's my love. That's the music I love.
And Dukas in Sorcerer's Apprentice, of course.
Well, that I actually used his theme.
Yeah.
I adapted it, but that to me, that was homage to this brilliant guy. You know? Yes, that's true. But you know, but if it's going to be like you're going to do like a Bad Boys one or Miami Vice, I'm not going to use it. No. What for? You know.
But is there anything of this of your work that you're particularly sort of this is proud of, or that you had a great experience with, of all those things that we talked about? We forgot to talk about National Treasure movies, of course, but is there any project that fits, this is sort of me, this is my
I think I tell you, one of my favorite scores I did was The Guardian, but the movie didn't do as well as we thought it would do, so it's kind of forgotten. But as a score, there's not all of it, but there's a lot of moments that I'm really proud of, you know. And then National Treasure, I thought, worked well. And although it's, you know, it's not something new, there's some sounds, but it's a very packaged, here it is, you know. But Titans, I definitely think I was proud of that. And the main theme from Armageddon, I was proud of. And funnily enough, the 6 Day... the melting of different aspects, I was kind of proud of.
Since the conversation went from talking about dissonant music to personal favorites, let's play the track Training Montage from Andrew Davies' 2006 movie The Guardian, starring Kevin Costner. While on the topic of Americana-themed movies, like The Guardian, it's also worth noting his particular attraction to this form of sort of broad composition, on display in scores like The Great Raid from 2005, Flyboys from 2006, and especially Remember the Titans from 2000, whose main title has been used extensively in Olympic Games and even presidential inaugurations over the years.
A little more later into the thing, I started doing some scores with just pretty much just orchestra, and I actually went to London and did a film, The Great Raid, and it was great because, you know, a lot of directors say, well, let's have the woodwinds and the strings and the brass separate so we can... And, you know, you always do that, and then you bring the mix, there's 24 mix faders for the final dub, and so they have the options. They never touch it. Well, why is it? And if you record the orchestra all at once, it's a much better sound, you know, when they're playing together. You know that,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was great for Flyboys and Great Raid, where we went to Ed Lyndhurst, worked with fabulous orchestra, and it was all done at once. So that doesn't have any guitars at all. It's just orchestra, which I love doing. I prefer doing it that way.
Yeah, that's the later question about the Americana sound that you're so good at with the Great Raid, Flyboys, and even Remember the Titans.
Yeah.
Which has been used by, I guess, Obama and...
And 12 or 13 Olympics, I don't know. It's like,
yes.
And it's so funny, someone came up to me and said, oh, I like John Williams' theme of the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, no, John Williams is fantastic, you know. And then the music came up. It was in my studio, and the music came. He said, "That's John Williams." I said, "No, that's from Remember the Titans." He said, "No, that's John Williams from," because I don't get a credit on the thing.
Oh,
so
no,
it says music John Williams. So they think that's him.
Okay,
I'm sure he doesn't want that either. You know,
that's a compliment.
It's a big compliment. Yeah.
This, then, is a selection from the 7-minute track Titan's Spirit, the famous theme from Remember the Titans. Now, with so many great film themes to choose from, surely there's room for a compilation album at this point in time?
You know, so many people have come to me and said, the record companies, we want to do this, and it's like, well, then you're going to have to get Sony and and that to talk, and, I wish, you know, I would actually say, let's do a charity album, find a great charity, and then everybody can allow it to go on that and just do it as a charity. I think that's the only way you could do it, you know. And all the proceeds go to, you know, cancer research.
For example.
I mean, why not, you know? Mm. But doing it commercially, impossible.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Rabin has scored 13 movies produced by Jerry Bruckheimer. So I wanted to ask, how is his relationship to Jerry Bruckheimer these days, and why hasn't he done more movies in the last 4 or 5 years?
Oh, Jerry and I get on fantastic, you know. I mean, you know, when I said, because there was Harry and I were talking about maybe doing Top Gun 2 when it comes out, but, you know, I'm on the road now. I've been on the road for years and two years.
Doing it, I think.
Oh, is that who's doing it?
I think so.
Ah, wow. That's interesting because he's Jerry's long ago. He did one for him. That's really interesting. It's a good idea, maybe, you know. But yeah, I just, once this thing came up, I thought, you know, I've done plus minus 50 movies. Mm. Maybe it's time. Just I want to have a break, and so I said I'm going to take a bit of time off. Maybe a couple of months, just go around the world with my wife, have some fun. I've been stuck in a studio for 12 years, you know, all the time. And you know, then the band, John and Rick, called me and said, do you want to, they've been talking about it for a while, and I always said I'm busy and I'm in the middle of a movie. So I said, well, I've got a bit of time. And he said, well, let's go and do some shows. I said, yeah, that would be fun. So we started, and then it went well, so we've continued and continued. But next, I'm going to start, I've got an album to do, a solo album, and an instrumental jazz rock album, which I did in 2012, called Jacaranda, and I'm going to, that it did quite well, and so the record company, I really want to do a second one, so I'm going to do that. But then I'm getting back into film.
Yeah, because it is now a couple of years, actually 5 years, where you haven't really done that many feature films.
Oh my God, is it 5 years?
I think it's Max. Or
Max,
something.
Yeah.
I think it's the last 2015, yes. 14, 15.
Oh my goodness, but I thought it was 2 years.
Yeah, time flies. But you have, of course, done this television show, 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much you did there. It's you and Paul.
Yeah, I did about 75-80% of it.
Yeah. And of course, that's, you know, you have this film music, original music by Paul Buckmaster for the original film. How much do you?
Oh, he did. Paul Buckmaster did that.
Did the Terry Gilliam film.
No, the only reason I took it on is that I'm not even listening to the original.
So let's play a cue from Trevor Rabin's latest efforts, the score for the television series 12 Monkeys. From 2015 and onwards, which he co-wrote with his longtime partner Paul Linford. This is the opening theme. Thank you. What then are some of his upcoming projects? Does he have any more films lined up, or is it all just about touring with Yes at the moment?
You know, I changed my agent. I'm now with Fortress, you know, Fortress Management, Rich Jacobellis, and I'm very close with him. And I feel bad because when I started doing the Yes thing, I was with Laura Engel, and I told her I was doing this, and it's kind of like, oh, you are? Are you fucking mad? But, I just wanted to play. Mm. You know, obviously it's more lucrative doing film, but just having some fun, you know? Mm. And I did it, but I thought it would be like 5-6 months. You know, we did the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It was like, oh, let's do a tour. So it was kind of a bit like that, even though it was put together before then. But when that happened, it kind of just enlarged the whole idea of the thing. But since I started, I mean, it's just gone on and on. And then we finished, so we do another tour. And it's like, no, I can't have done it. Oh, well, the other guys. And then I thought, oh, there's all these people relying on this tour. Mm. Just the crew. I mean, they're very good friends of mine. So I've stuck with it, and I'm enjoying playing. But I think once this, we do Europe, and then tonight we're here, obviously, and then Copenhagen, Sweden, and then the O2 in London, and Newcastle, I think. And then got some time off, and then we do 9, 10. They wanted to do 100 dates. And I said, I'm old. The singer's 10 years older than me. You know, he's like 74 years old. We're going to be 84. We should call ourselves the geriatrics.
Exactly.
So I said, no, look, you can always call me, and we can look at things, and if I'm not busy, we can do things. But once that tour's finished, I'm actually going to start booking. So I've promised Rich, when I come back, in between now and doing the next tour, he can start. I'll agree to start taking meetings and speaking to people, and I'll phone my friends, you know, Rennie and
Bruckheimer.
Yeah, and I'll phone Jerry. He doesn't think I've been available for ages. He called me for 2 or 3 projects actually, a lot of years ago, and obviously now that I've been away so long, I forgot. And I was doing other ones, and I was so mad I couldn't do it. But the one thing I was really mad about, he said, look, I got 2 movies I'm doing. They're right at the same time. You got to choose one. Mm-hmm. The one is a Disney movie about pirates. It's semi-comedic. Okay. And the other one is Bad Boys 2, and I thought, a stupid film about pirates? Oh my God, Jerry, you've gone off. This Bad Boys 2. And guess who was stupid? You know? I want to go to Hans. I said to Hans, I said, you bastard, you knew.
Yeah, well, you have your National Treasure franchise, so you have your own.
Yeah, that's franchise 3, but I haven't... I really, you know, once I focused on this, just like when I started films, because the band kept saying to me, come back, and I said, no, I'm really focused on this, you know. I mean, it's obviously a compliment and everything, as you say. I mean, I'm not being blasé. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a job. We all got jobs. Mine's a musician, so what's the big deal, you know? I never look at it like anything else like than that. And but now when I get back into it, I'm back in, you know.
Before, yeah.
Rich said to me, you know, you've been gone a long time. We've got to move, man. So he gave me this great analogy. He said, you know, if you look at a train and a scoring train, you know, you've got the first cabin with all the main guys, you know, and then the second cabin, the third cabin. He said, you're in the first cabin. You're lucky, you know, you're in the first cabin. But unfortunately, it's not like you get back on if you've been gone forever, get back in the C cabin and move. You're off the train.
Yeah.
You've got to get on the train, you know. She said, so be careful that doesn't happen. So I understand, but you've got to live your life, you know. And if it's hard, if I don't find something I want to do. I was lucky in the last couple of years. I did. And I was wrong sometimes, you know. Sometimes you choose something, oh, that's going to be great. I mean, Peter Siegel, fantastic director. I mean, I had to get smart with him. He was a great guy. But I did, what was it called? Not Raging Bull. The guy, Raging Bull and the Stallone.
The Grudge Match?
Grudge Match. Mm. I just thought, my goodness, Stallone, he's actually a funny guy. De Niro is just fantastic. And Peter, brilliant director. Timing for comedy. Unreal. So, I want to give him a call and see what he's doing. I mean, he's always... He did call me recently, and then the project he was doing fell through. I think they didn't get financing or something like that. Oh, I know where I was going. You think with that cast, Peter and those three people, it's going to be just huge. And I met with Mel Brooks, and he just said, make me look good. It felt so good, And then you look, and it's like, God, and I really couldn't find myself too well in that.
Yeah, you never know these things before.
You don't know. You read the scripts. Goodness. Peter, De Niro, it's like, I can't go wrong. But listen, I knew when I did Great Raid, Harvey Weinstein was getting out at Disney. That was going to be a movie without a daddy.
Yeah.
You got a distant cousin. Let's see. Priority way down there. I knew that, but I just loved it so.
And then you get sort of like a cult film like Snakes and Plane, just out of nowhere.
Oh, that
like
I loved. Yeah. And he's dead now. But he was great to work with. It's funny, one day we're having a big meeting at my studio with the producers and the this and the that, and the head of music and him and me, and we're going to be discussing some stuff. It wasn't a playback meeting, it was just discussing, and then I said I'll play back some cues they haven't heard. And I get a call at 9:30, and it's him. He said, hey, Trevor, meeting's off. I said, oh, what, are you all right? Is everything all right? He said, yeah, surf's up. Surf's too good. I'm not missing this. Mm. He just cancelled everybody. But, man, he was fun. That was such a fun movie to do.
Yeah. It's very fun to watch as well.
Yeah, it was great. And, it was so kind of tongue-in-cheek.
Absolutely.
The snake, it looked like rubber,
Yeah, everything was ridiculous, but it was
good ridiculous, right? Yeah.
Now, since our conversation ended with a brief chat about the cult favorite Snakes on a Plane, directed by the late David R. Ellis, I find it appropriate to sort of end this episode with a track called Snakes on Crack. We'll be right back. Right, so that was our conversation with Trevor Rabin. And although the conversation went in different directions, I think we managed to cover a lot of ground in our allotted time. Now, the Yes concert itself, which I actually attended later the same evening, was a treat, and it also featured the song I Am Waiting, which we briefly touched on in the interview. Anyways, thanks for listening, and if you have any comments, negative or positive, feel free to post in the field below. We'll return shortly with a new interesting episode. Until then, I wish you all happy listening.